Welcome to the second segment of the TSRA Journal Club series, which is focused today on the surgical management of early stage non-small cell lung cancer. My name is Bode Olufaja, and I'm first year traditional cardiothoracic fellow at the University of California, San Francisco. I have the privilege today to be moderating this webinar along with Jenna Aziz.
And then I'm Jenna. I am the integrated CT resident at The Ohio State. I'm lucky enough to have one of my faculty members on here as well. And then we'll go ahead and introduce everyone.
All right, great. I'll start with Dr. Chigozirim Ikeke. Dr. Ikeke is an assistant professor of surgery in the section of thoracic surgery at the University of Michigan. He completed his collegiate and medical school degrees at The Ohio State University. He started in general surgery and transferred to the integrated thoracic surgery program at the University of Pittsburgh. His research or his academic interests include surgical innovation and clinical research, specifically exploring the early role of thoracic surgical involvement in lung cancer screening, as well as implementing localized immunotherapy options for thoracic-based malignancies. His clinical interests include all facets of general thoracic surgery with advanced endoscopic, laparoscopic, and robotic surgical techniques. He's a member of the SCS, the General Thoracic Surgical Club, and the Chest Wall Injury Society. You're welcome, Dr. Ikeke.
Thanks, everyone, for having me. Really, it's a great pleasure to be here amongst renowned experts, Dr. Lam, Dr. Yang, and Jenna and Bode. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Next, we'll welcome Dr. Fatima Wilder. Dr. Wilder is an accomplished thoracic surgeon and the associate program director of the integrated residency program at the Brigham and Women's Hospital and the West Roxbury VA in Boston. She's on the SCS workforce and DEI, on the ABCTS, and on the scholarship committee for the Women in Thoracic Surgery. Her clinical research and clinical and research interests are in the intersection between lung cancer and the social determinants of health, with research focused on learning more about how it impacts our patient population and how we can address the related disparities. Dr. Wilder is a proud mom to three kids. Welcome, Dr. Wilder.
All righty.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
And then I have yet another Hopkins family member on the call. So we just have Dr. Yang. He is a professor of surgery and medical oncology, as well as the Arthur B. and Patricia B. Modell Endowed Chair in Thoracic Surgery at the Johns Hopkins Medical Institutions. He is the current president of the STSA. So as everyone said earlier, everyone should try to apply and go to that meeting. And he will become president of the TSDA in 2025. He is also the JTCVS Associate Editor for the Education Section. His clinical interests involve all aspects of general thoracic surgery with emphasis on lung and esophageal cancer, pectus excavatum and robotic surgery, patient safety outcomes, geriatric thoracic surgery, and enhancing the educational paradigm for medical students, residents, and faculty. Fun fact, he enjoys playing lounge piano, is an expert dancer, and also takes care of a puppy at home named Milo.
Thanks, Jenna. And even if you apply for this other, it doesn't mean every abstract will get on, but I'll do my best. But thank you for your kind invitation.
And then our next attending is one of my attendings we're very lucky to have on, which is Dr. Neuwirth. He is a thoracic surgeon with a board certification, both general and thoracic surgery. He is currently an associate professor of surgery at The Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center and specializes in minimally invasive surgery. His clinical practice focuses on the surgical treatment of thoracic malignancies, including lung cancer, esophageal cancer, and mediastinal tumors. And his research is directed towards improving patient-centered care through critically evaluating and expanding the applications of minimally invasive techniques, such as robotic and video-assisted thoracoscopic surgery, in the study of patient-reported outcomes. And for his fun fact, Dr. Neuwirth got a new puppy this year, and he is also an expert cycler.
Thank you, Jenna, for the introduction. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. We'll go ahead and start with the first paper. Have it displayed here. This was a study titled "The Randomized Trial of Lobectomy versus Limited Resection for T1N0 Non-Small Cell Lung Cancers." It was published in the Annals of Thoracic Surgery in 1995 by the Lung Cancer Study Group. This study was published at a time when there was an increased interest in the use of limited resection for managing early stage lung cancers as opposed to standard lobectomy. The study attempts to answer the question of whether limited resections had comparable outcomes to lobectomies in patients with T1N0 peripheral non-small cell lung cancer. Patients were selected into the study, included those who had clinical T1N0 peripheral tumors identified on chest x-rays and confirmed by pathologic sampling. Participants were accrued between February 1982 and November 1988. This was a randomized controlled trial with two treatment arms. Arm one was limited resection, which was defined by either an anatomic segmentectomy or a wedge resection with 2 centimeter margins. And arm two was a standard lobectomy. Participants in the study also had intraoperative assessment of their tumor margins and sampled nodes via prison section to confirm their T1N0 status. The endpoints were postoperative mortality, complications, pulmonary function, disease-free interval, and long-term survival. Patients were assessed for follow-up during hospital stay at 3-month intervals for 2 years, 6-month intervals for 3 years, and then yearly. The study was powered to show a 1.8-fold difference in survival between treatment arms, and survival analyses were performed with the Kaplan-Meier method. There were 247 eligible patients included in the final analysis, with 122 undergoing limited resection and 125 undergoing lobectomies. The table shown here emphasizes that there were no significant differences in important clinical characteristics of the patients. Hospital outcomes, including mortality, were not significantly different between the two groups. However, a long-term follow-up of overall mortality showed 30% increased mortality in the limited resection group. Cancer-related deaths were 50% higher in the limited resection group, and tumor recurrence was 75% higher in the limited resection group, with all these differences being statistically significant. When post-op pulmonary function was assessed, there were no significant differences between the two groups. Now, this figure here kind of illustrates this a little further. Figure one here shows Kaplan-Meier curves comparing survival among the two treatment arms. One can see how the curves diverge over the follow-up period in favor of lobectomy. The next figure shows an even wider divergence in the curves when time to recurrence was examined. So some takeaways from this study are that for T1N0 non-small cell lung cancer, lobectomy was associated with improved overall survival and reduced recurrence compared to limited resection. Also, there was no benefit from the standpoint of postoperative lung function among patients with limited resections. And as we examine this study and look at the results more closely, it's important for us to put into consideration that between the time the study was published and the current day, there have been significant advances in methods of pathologic analysis, molecular assays, targeted therapies, imaging techniques, et cetera. Well, at this point, I'm going to hand over to our panelists to discuss further. I'd like to highlight some of the strengths and limitations that you perceive from this study, as well as share with us how this study shaped practice over the past 3 decades.
Well, I guess being the oldest guy in the group and present when the study was going on, I'll take a shot at it. So I think, this is a historically important paper. So even though you know, we don't practice this right now. And the results were, you know, favoring lobectomy. I think it showed some, you know, a couple of things. One that, you know, the lung cancer study group was the study group that all thoracic surgeons participated in. So it sort of melted away over time. But those of you who do general thoracic surgery, if you come to the General Thoracic Surgical Club, there's a Ginsburg Trials Day. So we spend a day going over all trials. So we don't have a quote lung cancer study group anymore, but there, you know, we do have multidisciplinary institutional oncologic groups that are formed, ECOG, SWOG, et cetera. I think that these days, you know, the lung cancer study groups were, it turned into, people remember from the American College of Surgeons, there was an ACOSI group, American College of Surgeons Oncology Group, and that sort of broke apart. And now there's the Alliance, which hopefully all of us participate in. So it's a little bit about, you know, participating in multi-institutional trials. And so I think that was the major thing about this paper. And as you pointed out, you know, I think, you know, one of the big differences, it's, you know, 40 years ago, really weren't doing minimally invasive. There wasn't any PET scanning. People just got a CAT scan and just took them to the operating room. So they were basically clinically stage one based upon CT scan. And, you know, lung cancer's changed. You know, back then, I'll tell you, you know, GGOs and small nodules really never existed because, again, they're sort of parallel with Dr. Ginsburg had also done was a cancer screening trial. And it showed that CT, that chest x-rays didn't really help with screening. So tumors were usually found at a later time point. Very diverse group, showed that you could do clinical trials together. You know, PFTs, I mean, what there is a table there actually showing the differences between sublobar and lobectomies, and the lung function change was actually smaller, statistically smaller in the lobar limited resection group. So that is important to know as we discuss the newer papers. I think, again, the major problems with it, maybe under staging, you know, they use 60 as a cutoff for the age ranges. And, you know, now, it's, you know, 70 is the new 60. So again, you know, very old data. Again, I think lung cancer has changed over the last couple of decades. So, you know, wouldn't read too much into the data, but this is a very important historical trial.
Thank you, Dr. Yang. Did other panelists have any other takes on the paper?
Yeah, I can share my perspective. So, you know, this is the landmark paper that that we all grew up with and really defined the surgical standards for the treatment for early stage lung cancer. Is done at a time where there were not a lot of randomized trials, specifically in thoracic surgery. To date, we don't have that many. But this is, you know, this is really the one that defined what we do and set lobectomy as the SCOLD standard for treatment and patients that were surgical fit to undergo lobectomy. And so you know, doing additional trials and looking at the same question again was viewed very critically. And I think that it took a lot of work globally from different investigators to push for that. And I think we're now seeing the results, but this was a huge effort. If you're doing a clinical trial, especially in surgery, you have to have equipoise, or think you have to have equipoise, and having such a strong signal, this was a very significant result favoring lobectomy. So that, you know, really set the standard. It was difficult to change that. But there were a lot of other surgical series and experiences and patient that did very well with sublobar resection, and the surgical techniques advanced, the staging advanced. As Dr. Yang mentioned, the imaging is a world of difference now than it used to be. These patients were staged with X-rays sometimes only, or CT scans. The CT scans back then, it was, you know, holding up to the light, and you were you were seeing little images, and very different. And PET scans were not happening either, so the staging was different, and certainly a different patient population and different surgeries that we do at this current time. So we learned over the time that sublobar resection had a place, but it was really difficult to fight against this strong, you know, signal from this important study. And but yeah, I'm happy that we can talk about the new studies now.
Yeah, really, really very, those are all very important points, and really great to hear your perspective on those. We're gonna go into the next paper, which is looks at a very similar topic, but in a more contemporary moment. If any other panelists have something to add regarding this paper, we could go through that. Otherwise, we'll go to the next paper. All right.
I'll echo Peter and Dr. Okay. Yang's sentiments here. I mean, like, you know, I mean, oncological care has gotten way more complex compared to when this paper was first started, you know, whether it's from the radiographic imaging and staging to what we know about the science. I mean, that's really, you know, cut and dry. And so, and obviously the surgical skill set has advanced, you know, tremendously, even with bats, right? Because the open was still the main approach during the time of the paper, and now to robotic. So, I mean, everything they said before, but just being up to speed where things are, you know, 30 plus years later, I mean, the field has just changed so much. So, you know, at the time it was right, but now things have changed. I think I'll be interested to see what, you know, Dr. Yang, what your thoughts are as far as the boards are concerned. You know, I was in service, it was lobectomy, you know, all the way for these lung cancer cases. So now how does the boards now format the questions so that a segment of sublobar resection is the right answer? And how should one articulate that, you know, whether it's on the written or on the oral? So I think that would be something for us as trainees to be aware of, to say, hey, you know, there's obviously the clinical aspect, what we see on the wards, but also for the exam, how should people legitimately answer the question, given that there's recent data that shows so low bar is an okay operation. It's okay to do that. And so, but anyway, I'm sure we'll talk about that on subsequent papers.
Thank you, Dr. Keke. Dr. Wilder, did you have anything to add?
No, I'm going to save all my comments for later in the discussion.
Okay.
Because I think they've highlighted all the strengths of this paper and the reasons why it's important. And I think we can, you know, there's so much that the new literature and studies are offering to the field. So we can move forward.
All righty. So I'll go ahead and zoom forward maybe a few decades. So thank you for helping us discuss sort of the dogma for management of early stage non-small cell. And I am going to go ahead and talk with the group about JCOG 0802, so comparing segmentectomy versus lobectomy and small size peripheral non-small cell lung cancer. If we go on to the next slide, I'll start to go through the methods. So in general, our clinical question and this study was powered for non-inferiority as well as superiority. And it's asking in patients with clinical stage 1A small size non-small cell, is segmentectomy non-inferior and or superior to lobectomy with regards to overall survival? In terms of design, it was a multi-institutional, randomized, open-labeled, controlled non-inferiority trial. And our enrollment was between 2009 and 2014. And it was performed in Japan amongst 70 centers, and it was utilized intention to treat. There was a two-step registration process. So as you can sort of see, the registration steps listed here, our primary step was based on radiography, and our population had to have tumors of less than 2 centimeters, a consolidation to tumor ratio greater than 0.5, and tumors had to be located peripherally in the outer one-third of the pulmonary parenchyma. Then there, again, are listed the secondary registration characteristics. And at the end of this, there were 1,106 participants, 554 who were randomized to lobectomy, and 552 who were randomized to segmentectomy. On the next slide, we can see our primary and our secondary endpoints. And our primary endpoint in this study was overall survival, which we might discuss in further studies how this varied for primary endpoint. And then there are a slew of secondary endpoints that are listed below, including postoperative respiratory function at 6 months and 12 months, relapse-free survival, proportion of local relapse, and adverse events, amongst the other things that are also there. I also included briefly the population characteristics, which show that the population actually consisted of about 40-ish percent of never smokers, and there were a high degree of adenocarcinoma patients. In this study, approximately 50% of patients for both groups had solid tumors, and fewer had some, and the rest had some degree of GGO. In terms of results, on the next slide, we can see our Kaplan-Meier survivorship curve. And at a 5-year survival point, lobectomy was, there was 94% for survival for lobectomy and 91% for segmentectomy. And looking at our p-values, our primary endpoint was not only non-inferior, but also superior to lobectomy. And we'll get into what this means in the discussion a little bit further. And then in the next slide, we also have our secondary endpoint showing our proportion of relapse, which is shown to be similar for both segmentectomy and lobectomy, or recurrence-free relapse, which is similar for both lobectomy and segmentectomy. Another thing that came up in the study was a recurrence pattern. So overall, if you look on that chart on the right, the total recurrence pattern was about 50% higher for segmentectomy over lobectomy. An isolated local regional occurrence was about 7% in segmentectomy and 3% in lobectomy. If you look at our proportion of local recurrence, this was found to be significant. But then if you go back and again and look at that chart on the left for relapse-free survival, there was no difference. And then on the next chart, and this was something that is super, has been talked about a lot in the utilization of sublobar or resection versus lobectomy, is what is the importance of this, of sublobar resection on pulmonary function. And so the investigators of the study were hoping that to declare that you would have a FEV1 reduction of greater than, or an expected reduction of 10%. However, our segmentectomy patients had a difference of 3.5%. Our lobectomy patients had a difference of 2.7%. So although there was a significant difference in benefit for segmentectomy patients, this was not clinically meaningful based on how the study was powered. And then if you go to the next section, I think that should be the end of our slides. And that was the same chart as well. So in terms of questions, what strengths or weaknesses should we be aware of from the study, and what are the big takeaways? It's a really broad question, but I figured we could narrow down from there.
I think, you know, as we alluded to earlier with the studies that allowed for segmentectomy versus lobectomy, one of the things to note in this study is that they did not include a wedge resection as part of the sublobar assessment, which the Al-Turki trial did. So that's one big thing to consider, because at least in the US and in the places where I've trained, wedges are, you know, considered depending on the location of the tumor and so on, as considered legitimate depending on the size of the mass. I think that, you know, as I was thinking about these studies, the more recent studies compared to the original trial, the question was, why did we see such a difference? Why is it that all of a sudden segmentectomies are seemingly better, or if at least non-inferior? And one of the big things, as has been alluded to, is just technology and the role that minimally invasive surgery has played in terms of our ability to perform maybe more precise dissection, improve visualization, maybe things that might have been limiting in 30 or 40 years ago in terms of, you know, a thoracotomy and doing a lobectomy that way. The other thing is, you know, the question of segmentectomy and how it's defined, because being specific in delineating that you're resecting or transecting an artery and a vein and a bronchus and calling that a lobectomy, I mean, a segmentectomy, is everybody doing that? And is that why maybe some of the outcomes that we are seeing differently between the two studies is there? And then the other thing is just thinking about, you know, this just highlights the fact that just because people may recur sooner, we have the advantage of technology, the advancements in oncology and additional treatments, radiation therapy, so on and so forth, that's allowing people to live long enough to get additional treatment that ultimately prolongs their life. So maybe the endpoint isn't necessarily simply do they recur, but what is their quality of life when they do recur, and what other options are we allowing them to have if and when that recurrence takes place? So I think these studies, this and the next one, both really highlight those in terms of questions or points for consideration in terms of how we manage our patients.
Well, I'll say, I think, you know, one big difference is we, you know, between this study and the Al-Torky trial, and also the first one, is that I think you have to understand, I think lung cancer, the biology of the disease is different in Asia. If you look at the demographics, you know, there was a very large non-smoking population in the JCOG trial. I think it was like 40% are non-smokers, as opposed to, I think it's only 10% in the Al-Torky trial. So you do have to sort of understand that the biology is different for the Asian cancers. And you know, as Jenna pointed out, you know, they included GGOs, but you know what part of the GGO do you include? Well, do you include the solid part, whereas the Al-Torky trial, which we'll talk about in a second, really didn't. So we can talk about comparisons later. You know, the good thing is you could see that, you know, the Japanese did, you know, a great job accruing. Forgot how many years it took to do it. You know, we always complain about it takes you know, clinical trials on average takes about 17 years to complete. So by the time you publish the results, you know, there's something new. So you have to sort of also think about that. But the other problem is, you know, there's huge segmentectomies and there's small segmentectomies. So is a basilar segmentectomy the same as a superior segmentectomy? It's not. You need to take out more tissue, you know. Supseg is about 5%, basilar is about 10%. So I think that's one of the, you know, other problems is that, you know, yes, they're conferred a difference with segmentectomies, but you have to also, you know, have to think about which segments are you taking out, so that, you know, a bigger segment, trisegmentectomy on the left-hand side, apical posterior upper lobe, you may, you know, it's almost equivalent to a lobectomy on the right side. So, but as I said, it was a huge trial. They accomplished, I forgot the time span, and they had really good follow-up. So that's my discussion on this.
Yeah, I was very impressed with this trial. It almost accrued 1,000 patients. And this trial was started after the Al-Torky trial, by the way. This came, I think, a year or two afterwards. So yeah, they've done a fantastic job. And I think, you know, going to picking up Dr. Yang's comment about the segmentectomy, the Japanese surgeons have, I think they're quite good at these in general. I would say if you think about, all the publications that you see and you know the books that are written about segmentectomies, the Japanese surgeons have been kind of on the forefront pushing for this approach. And that doesn't mean that they're all doing. So I think that there's a high quality of surgical care here in the segmentectomy that we have to assume based on the impression, at least that I have. It's important to know that, you know, how patients are selected. They were, you know, based on the clinical stage. So there were patients in this study that were upstaged, not an insignificant amount of patients. I think about 7% of patients were upstaged in the whole trial. And they did check margins though. And this is something, if you want to start applying this type of data in our own clinical practice, we have to do those things as well. Check margins. If you don't know, or if you're getting close to it, the tumor, you got to check, or is a GGO, you want to make sure you remove the whole thing. And there were several patients in this trial that were converted to as lobectomy based on positive margins. What stood out to me in the results is obviously the survival data is incredible. 5-year survival that we cannot achieve here. And that speaks to the biology of the tumor. A lot of non-smokers, almost exclusively adenocarcinomas. And so, yeah, it's just a different patient population, different biology. But there is a discrepancy between this almost, you know, the better survival. I mean, this was powered for non-inferiority, but actually showed a better overall survival for segmentectomy as compared to lobectomy. And that was statistically significant. And however, the recurrence rate was twice as high with segmentectomy. So there's a discrepancy between the overall survival. So the authors actually did a good job about working some of that up for the reader and explain that there were a lot of non-cancer related deaths associated with lobectomy. And we don't know exactly why patients were dying, but it wasn't from cancer. But it kind of suggests in conjunction with the pulmonary function data that there is an impact on longevity on these patients. Potentially, it's not directly proven, but it kind of, to me, that's what it implies. So it's kind of a strong signal that we should be trying to save as much parenchyma as we can with these small, you know, subsolid tumors, especially in this patient, you know, in patients that would meet the inclusion criteria for this trial. So I think we're seeing more and more of these also in our area and in the Western patient population. We see more cancers in never smoker, more cancers in women, younger individuals. So I think it was a very important study.
All right, well, that's a really great discussion.
I was going to add one more thing is because with more CT screening, we are seeing smaller nodules. And so I think you do want to preserve lung function, you know, in the chance that, you know, these people develop a second primary. In my practice, it's a fairly significant number of patients, about, I'd say 6-8%. And I do follow my patients long-term, like forever. And they, do have second primaries, they have another nodule. So you do want to preserve as much lung function for that, just in the happenstance that they need another resection in the future.
Thank you, Dr. Yang. And speaking of that, would you think that do you have a practice to do this more for patients? Like you'd mentioned the Asian population being different biology, so patients from that population, probably with EGFR mutations, et cetera, would you have a higher tendency to go with a limited resection approach for those compared to the general population? Would you do it differently?
No, I I actually do a lot of segmentectomies. If they fit the criteria, I like doing segmentectomies. I think it's important that we all learn how to do them, but I don't distinguish based upon race. Even if it's a non-Asian person comes in with a peripheral less than 2 centimeters, I offer them a segment.
All right. Well, thanks so much. We would go forward to speak about the third paper right now, which is titled Lobar or Sublobar Resection for Peripheral Stage 1A Non-Small Cell Lung Cancer. It was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in February 2023 by Dr. Altorki and colleagues. The study aims to answer the question, do sublobar resections have comparable outcomes with lobar resections among patients with peripheral T1A/N0 non-small cell lung cancer? It was a multicenter, international, non-inferiority, randomized controlled trial with several centers across the United States, Canada, and Australia. The patient selection was based on clinical peripheral T1A/N0 non-small cell lung cancer identified on CT and confirmed by pathologic sampling. And to clarify here, T1A stage here was defined as less than 2 centimeters. Participants were accrued between June 2007 and March 2017. The treatment arms were very similar to the 1995 study which we looked at earlier, where one arm was a sublobar resection, the other was a lobar resection. Now, in contrast to the last paper we just discussed, sublobar resections here included segmentectomies and wedge resections. The primary endpoint was disease-free survival. The secondary endpoints were overall survival rates, recurrence, and postoperative pulmonary function. Patients were followed for a median of 7 years, and the data were analyzed using an intention to treat analysis with Kaplan-Meier estimates made and sensitivity analysis performed. There were 697 eligible patients included in the study, with 340 undergoing sublobar resections and 357 undergoing lobar resections. These patients came from 83 different institutions. Among patients who had sublobar resections, majority of them had wedge resections, accounting for 59%. When disease-free survival was examined, sublobar resections were shown to be non-inferior to lobar resections. The graph shown here illustrates this very clearly, with the two curves, which represent the treatment arms, overlapping throughout the follow-up period. With regards to overall survival, sublobar resections were not inferior to lobar resections. And when 6-month pulmonary function was assessed, there were significantly worse FEV1 and FVC seen in the lobar resection group compared to the sublobar group. The two graphs shown here illustrate again the similarity in the recurrence-free survival and overall survival among the two groups. This study basically, in summary, showed that for T1A/N0 non-small cell lung cancers, which again is defined as cancers less than 2 centimeters, sublobar resections and lobar resections had similar disease-free, recurrence-free, and overall survival. And there was also reduced 6-month pulmonary expiratory function among patients with lobar resections compared to those with sublobar resection. At this point, I would hand over to our panelists to highlight some of the strengths. I know we kind of touched on some of them already, but some of the strengths and limitations of this study as compared to the studies we discussed earlier, and also to discuss with us how we can apply the findings of this study in our current practice.
I think we should give Dr. Yang the opportunity to speak first. He's a co-author on the paper, and I would be specifically interested in, what your experience was. It also was a mountain of work, I'm sure. Specifically, patients were randomized after they had, I think, lymph node biopsies and you know, very late randomized. So it was a lot of work on the surgeons to get this done, to counsel the patients about it. How did you select patients? How was your experience participating in this trial?
And I think I have a question to add on to that in terms of the lymph node, because you guys did not include stations 8 and 9, and that's just something that people should consider, because I feel like in almost all our lymph node dissections, we, at least as a trainee, you know you're going to get 9 and 8 if you're not going to do anything else in that case.
Well, you're hammering me. I still have PTSD from that trial. As you know, anyone who's done clinical trials, it takes a lot of work of study coordinators to really talk with them. And, you know, you flip a coin in the OR, so you decide whether you do a segment or you do a lobe. And you have to dedicate a lot of time, you know, frozen sections, making sure you get the correct nodes. And those of you, frozen sections take a long time now. It didn't used to take this long. It used to take like 15-20 minutes. So I don't know what they're doing in pathology now. So it's very meticulous. So you do have to go through sampling the nodes, sending them for frozen section, then you get the you break the code whether you do a sublobar or lobar. I was a little biased a bit. I always felt that a segmentectomy, an anatomic resection, is better than just a regular wedge resection. So I think we contributed, forgot how many patients, about 30, 35 patients. And, I always firmly believe the sublobar resection was, a segmentectomy is better than a wedge resection. Because you get the nodal drainage all the way down to the bronchus. Remember, you know, your nodes always follow the bronchus. And so if you're able to get the takeoff right at that, at the separation point of the segment, I felt that just in general, I thought that was a better operation. So it does take a quite a bit of time. Again, segmentectomies are all different. Lobes are all different. Again, I think, you know, the one lobe that did not confer any differences was the left lower lobe. Yeah, I mean, nowadays the practice, you know, those of you who know the Committee on Cancer guidelines, it's 3+1. So you have to get 3 mediastinal nodes and 1 hilar node. I think 8 stations, 8 and 9 are important for the lower lobes, but you know, if you're doing an upper lobe, you know, why do you need to get stations 8 and 9? The lymphatic flow doesn't go down there, but you know, you end up doing it just to satisfy the Committee on Cancer criteria. So again, you know, putting these two papers together, I feel that you know, getting to Chico's question earlier, since I'm the exam chair for the board, I can't really tell you what the question, what the answer technically is, but practically, I think, you know, if you get a patient with a peripheral less than 2 centimeter mass and clinically and intraoperatively your nodes are negative, I think a segmentectomy is the treatment of choice for that. Lobectomy is fine. We've shown in these two papers that segmentectomies are non-inferior. Whether they confer a pulmonary function advantage, you know, it sort of depends upon the segment, whether that translates into overall survival. Again, I think there may be a tendency that lobectomies have a little bit lower long-term survival compared to segmentectomies. So anyway, that was sort of my experience. I don't take as much time these days in the OR. Fatima knows that we just sort of blow right through the cases. They clinically are negative. I mean, you know, the other thing we have, which these trials did not have, is EBUS. So, you know, a significant number of our patients these days undergo EBUS. And if they're negative and there's no discordance with the PET scan and CT scan results, that is, if there's no adenopathy and there's no PET avidity, and if the EBUS is negative, then I think we don't have to spend the time in the OR to do all those frozen sections. What do you guys think?
That's really, I appreciate that perspective. I think what you were saying in terms of the lymph nodes, that's going to be key. I think it's easy to look at this trial and to say, okay, well, now we can do, you know, wedge out everything that's peripheral and so forth. But it's truly, this trial had a high standard on staging. So these were all pathologically confirmed stage 1A tumors or cancers. And you had to really stage the lymph nodes. I mean, level 8 and 9, maybe that's a short shortfall of the study, but there were no upstaging here that at least reported. So these were all truly stage 1A. So if you're doing a wedge, I think, yes, you need to go after the lymph nodes. You need to do a full lymph node dissection. And you actually, if you don't stage the whole mediastinum and the hilum preoperatively, you need to send your frozens off and really make sure that you're going to be negative there. We saw in the other papers that in various papers that the rate of nodal upstaging is still around 6-7% for these small tumors. So, you know, having occult lymph node metastasis. But I think, yeah, this really confirms for us in our, you know, in our patient population that we can do these sublobar resections. And yeah, the onus is now on us to appropriately select the patients. It's, you know, sublobar resection is not the right thing for everybody, and lobectomy is definitely not the right thing for everybody. So I think it's great. I used to spend a lot of time with patients having to argue why I would do a segmentectomy for them, not a lobectomy, and have to document that in my clinical chart. It was, you know, it's arduous, but now, you know, it's standard of care. We can really with confidence offer this to patients. So I think this is also a landmark study, and it's really practice changing.
I think some points, maybe moving beyond a little bit in terms of the highlights and the strengths, and obviously all the positives that this study adds to the field, but thinking about kind of where things are going as someone who's in her second year of practice, there's a lot of, there are a lot of additional therapies out there that are presenting themselves that are important for patients with these early stage peripheral tumors. The number of patients, especially like in the veteran population, who are not really the best surgical candidates. And you're like, should I take them and do a wedge? Should I do a segmentectomy? Do they need to talk to radiation oncology about SBRT? Those are all things that I can see in the future, maybe trials that are going to turn into important monuments for how we take care of the more complex patients that also have early stage disease, but may not be the best surgical candidates. And then the topic of pulmonary function tests was another thing I was thinking about here, because we have changes that have happened with the types or the way PFTs are being utilized with race-based versus race-neutral PFTs and how that may be being applied at your institution. So if you're going to be practicing and you're interpreting PFTs and talking to a patient about how doing a wedge or a segment on them versus doing a lobectomy is going to impact their pulmonary function, moving forward, you need to be considering which PFTs and what measurement is being used to decide their function and how well they're going to do. And then also in the Al-Turki paper, they did mention that there are other ways we can measure it besides the traditional PFTs, right? Your 6-minute walk test, you can theoretically do a VQ scan or other ways to measure frailty or ability to tolerate resection. So I think this is, it's like another seed on the path to better and more targeted patient care, but it's almost like the more detailed we've become, the more specific therapies and the more advanced therapies are out there that we need to consider in terms of deciding who should get what treatment and who would be best served with what treatment.
Well, I think in the end, you know, when you know, putting these three papers collectively, you know, the one question is, you know, what's the best cancer operation? And if we're very focused on this subpopulation of patients, peripheral, less than 2 centimeters, node negative, I think a segmentectomy is just as good as a lobectomy. But you know, as you're starting your practice, it's fine to do a lobectomy until you get more comfortable with segments. Segments are very difficult to do. You know, I had the advantage of doing them open, so I could see spatially what they look like. And then some segmentectomies are much easier than others. So you know, as you get into your practice, you have to feel comfortable with these different types of segment techniques. The other is, you know, the perioperative risk is, you know, are they too risky for a lobectomy? You know, based upon PFTs or echo or right heart function. So again, if it's they're higher risk, then you fall back and doing a segment, knowing that, you know, the at least the oncologic outcomes should be as good as a, you know, lobectomy. And then, you know, I think we can debate the pulmonary function advantage or disadvantages all night, but you know, again, right now is at least it's not any worse than a lobectomy.
Thank you, Lepiang, and thank you everyone else for really, really great comments that have been put forward today. In the next few minutes, just go over a case, and Jenna.
Yep. So someone on this panel might recognize this case. I don't know who, but we have a case of a 56-year-old female never smoker with a past medical history of anxiety, hypertension, asthma, hyperlipidemia, who had a right parotid tumor resected in 2019 and was actually found to have an incidental right upper lobe 1.5 centimeter ground glass nodule on her parotid surveillance CT. She was referred to Palm Clinic, and after a nav bronch and biopsy, it was found to be positive for adenocarcinoma. Here's a quick rundown of her past surgical history, meds, family history, social history, and then we'll just go to the next slide to look at some more of the preoperative workup. And she's really lucky. She was very healthy. Her PFTs were better than probably mine sitting here right now. And on PET, her nodule had mild hypermetabolic activity, SUV 1.6, and she was clinically staged as 1A. Going on to the imaging, and this sort of comes back to, and I don't know if you can press play on that, it should work. It sort of goes back to this conversation you guys were beginning to have, is what is the appropriate operation for your patient? We can sort of see that the nodule sort of bounded our intersegmental boundaries. And if you go to the next slide, I just have some cross-sectional images of our nodule, sort of looking, as you can see, potentially bordering the apical and posterior right upper lobe segment. So my question would be, what would you offer this patient? And at different stages of your training, would you potentially have offered a different intervention?
Radiation.
So I'm going to speak first because I have to run to another meeting. I think at my in my hands today, I think a lobectomy would likely be the most in the, this is the right upper, in the right upper lobe at that location. I'm thinking apical posterior segmentectomy most likely, but if I had any difficulty, do the lobectomy. I wouldn't hedge on, because this is not, I don't know how, you know, measuring central versus peripheral, I don't know that this is truly that peripheral. So that would be another reason to be a bit more aggressive for this patient. In my hands, not in Dr. Yang's hands.
Well, you know, these days they have these very sophisticated apps to figure out which segments there are. So again, you have different ways of figuring out these. I mean, I would have probably call this is a posterior segment. I think the other is to make sure you have good margins. You have to have at least, the same diameter of your invasive component. I probably would offer a segmentectomy. But there's other ways of trying to figure it out. So not only with these apps, but you could use the robotic bronchoscope these days to, again, if you're not exactly sure where it is, you can mark it. You might be able to see it on the pleural surface, but that also tells me which segment it's in. There's many ways, especially when you're early in your career, to learn these segments. So what's the right answer?
Well, I'll finish. This is my patient. So young Asian female, never smoker, could be EGFR, associated lung cancer. She's she actually sought second opinion on this. When I saw her, I said, and we actually did map this. It was in the posterior segment of the upper lobe, but it was really bordering that intersegmental plane, was touching the intersegmental plane going into the apical segment. So I said, we can try that, but it would be kind of an extended segment, and it could be a possibility versus doing a lobectomy. And I think that if you counsel those patients beforehand, I think most segmentectomy patients should be counseled about a possible lobectomy, because sometimes it's just technically not feasible, or you're running into positive margins, or you're running into problems. So it should not be a disappointment to the patient if they have a lobectomy, is what I was trying to say. But given the location, I recommended a lobectomy. She sought a second opinion based on her insurance, and saw a very established surgeon in our field, and expert surgeon, who thought that maybe we could do a bisegmentectomy. And then I had to call the patient again and really kind of talk through that. Bisegmentectomy, what would mean that, removing the posterior and apical segment. This is when we get into what Dr. Yang was saying before. This is the, you're getting diminishing returns here. You have a little nub in there, anterior segment left. You're dividing a large amount of parenchyma for this, really, in a patient that has completely normal or better than normal lung function, potentially a risk for complication afterwards with air leak, longer hospital stay, and what have you. And I don't know how much we're going to gain from this. So I said, your best chance is, for a quick recovery is probably the lobectomy. This thing is going to be gone. And that's what we did. And she went home post-op day one. She's doing great. We're checking molecular on her, because there's a clinical trial possibly doing immunotherapy if she's driver negative. I think this is a case where, this definitely meets the criteria for a segmentectomy. And I think you can, in the right hands, if you have it mapped out well, if you're confident in the location of this thing, getting a good margin, checking the margin intraoperatively, I think a segmentectomy is absolutely reasonable and oncologically just as good. But we also have to think about technicalities of what that means intraoperatively, and what it means for patients' recovery. And from that standpoint, I think, painting the whole picture to the patient, I think I think this is also very reasonable to do a lobectomy. That's what I chose to do.